For the rest of you, I'm not here necessarily to talk about, welcome by the way, I'm not here necessarily to talk about the 7-8 upgrade or the 95-98 upgrade, but what I'm specifically hoping to run you through today is the example of, I have a user who has done something stupid, right? Or the world exploded, or a random photon emitted from the sun struck the hard disk in just the wrong location, and so consequently, that machine is having a problem. Right? That's what we're here for. We're here to try to, with these technology conferences and with all of the reading that we do, we're here to try to make our jobs easier. We're here to try to automate wherever possible. And so, consequently, there is some new and nice technologies that Microsoft has released in System Center 2012 with the aid of some of the technologies prior to it, a la the Microsoft Deployment Toolkit, a la RIS, a la even Ghost in some ways, if you want to think about it that way, that the incorporation of which can actually just make your lives a little bit better. And by making your lives a little bit better, I mean eliminating some of the ridiculously, awfully manual tasks that occur in your daily life. Now, the first thing you may be wondering if you're walking in or have been sitting down and listening to all this pre-show banter is, who in the world is this ponytailed guy standing up in front of me and why do I care? My name is Greg Shields. I am an MVP with Microsoft, a vExpert with VMware, and a CTP with Citrix. More importantly, I'm one of the senior partners of a company called Concentrated Technology. If you have ever read an IT magazine or a white paper or attended a webinar, odds are good that you've probably read something that has been written by myself or one of our other partners or have presented on those webinars. We get around, I guess. This is our contact information, too. If you're interested in getting to know me, just send me an email. Love to chat with you, particularly about what we're here to talk about today. So the question you must be asking, right, is you, Greg, are trying to assert to me that I am going to be able to create this environment where I'm going to allow the users the one thing that I've always promised I wouldn't allow them, which is choice. Really? Self-service refresh? You must be mad. Well, in previous generations of this technology, you might have thought that. Even as far back into the wild and woolly days of Windows 95, you might have thought that. But in fact, self-service refresh is something that, well, this is nothing new. And you may say, aha, Mr. Shields, what are you talking about? Self-service is something that doesn't make a lot of sense, and so consequently, it can't be very new. But in fact, the notion of self-service is a concept that Microsoft has been interested in presenting to us since the year 1995. Do you believe me? No? Do you believe me? Does anybody here remember a certain icon in a control panel back in the days of 1995 that looked something like this? Right? Somebody read off what the name of that control panel is. Right, it's called Add Remove Programs. Now let me ask you the important question. How many of you here back in the days of 1995 ever used that control panel item to add anything? Right? One person. Terminal services, right? When we're adding a terminal services application, we would use that add remove programs icon. That add remove programs icon is there because self-service has honestly been one of those things that's been around since Windows 95, right? The add remove programs icon was there so that you could begin initiate the install activity for an application, but it was also something that a little bit later on could be tied into technologies like SMS at the time, whereby SMS or even group policy, if you remember, could deploy an application and make it available for users that they could install whenever they wanted to. Do you remember this? Now the question is did anybody implement that? We got one person. How did it go for you? What, one time. You tried it one time. Oh, it was before your time. Welcome to this generation of computing. Yeah. So the whole idea here is that this is not something that is particularly new. But you're right, none of us actually took advantage of this capacity for our users to use this interesting thing. Now, I'll tell you, there are a couple of reasons why, right? There are a couple of reasons why self-service didn't take off then and has taken off now. Number one is, more so than at any point in our past, our users finally just grok the entire notion of what an app is. Am I right? Right? Does anybody here have an iPad? Does anybody here have an iPad? Right? Right? Who has an iPad with them right now? Who has an iPad with them right now? You have an iPad? Let me see your iPad. Let me see your iPad. So you all know what this device is, right? This is an iPad. These iPad devices have completely revolutionized our relationship with our users because he's taking all the dirtiness off of the iPad. That's pretty impressive there, by the way. Bad joke. So you've seen these iPads, right? Have you used one? Right? I gave one of these to my wife a number of years ago. And she's playing around with it, and she comes into my office after about a day, and she's like, I gotta ask you something, Greg. You've been doing this like software installation and automated installation stuff now for a long time. And she touches in two places, and she punches in her password, and she installs an app, right? And then she says to me, what the heck have you been doing for the last 15 years? Thank you. For a long time, for the entire history of the IT industry, one of the things that we've been doing and spending a lot of time burning processor cycles on is in packaging up applications or in installing applications and getting them installed out to our users. And what has it done to our workday? It's increased the workday quite a bit. If you are still doing management by walking around with DVDs, well, you are essentially at this point creating a lot of extra work for yourself. So the iPad changed the relationship with our users and made the entire idea of what an app is something that a non-technical user can understand. This is important issue number one. Do you agree? Number two is that more so than at any point in our past, we IT professionals finally are beginning to wrap our minds around the notion of layering as it relates to desktop deployment. I asked the question earlier, right? This is a ghost session, right? And you all laughed. Why did you all laugh? Not the least of which being that Ghost was sunsetted about a month ago and is no longer actually an active product in Symantec's portfolio. But I got a woohoo way in the back. But more importantly, that tools like Ghost were one of these, they're one of these really weird sorts of IT applications or IT tools that, unlike most tools, using Ghost was easy in the beginning and then got harder the longer you used it. Who here has the most number of Ghost images in their environment or at some point in their history? Right, who here has the most? There. 140. Can we beat 140? The last time I asked the question, we had 210. 314. There was a pause there because he had to add them up. Now, 314 multiplied by, I don't know, 10 or 20 gigs is a lot of space. More importantly, when was the last time you could keep 314 different items straight in your head? Not easy. Well, the notion of layering is this, and this is an article I wrote for TechNet Magazine. I told you I write for all the magazines. This is an article I wrote for TechNet Magazine many, many years ago titled A Case for the Layered Approach to Deploying Windows Desktops. And the whole concept here is that the idea of a monolithic deployment approach that old tools like Ghost were using was great in the beginning because it was easy, but got harder and harder and harder over time because, well, when I had to create 314 different desktop images, I was really creating a lot of extra work for myself. The whole point of this is there at the very bottom, that we start with what is effectively a blank zero state right out of the box, right off the DVD operating system, and then we layer things on top. Okay? I can layer things like drivers, I can layer things like OS updates, I can layer things like applications over the top, I can layer my configuration changes, I can layer my personality over the top of that. And so this approach is an approach that has been essentially manifested initially in technologies like the Windows Deployment Toolkit. And if you look at the Windows Deployment Toolkit, you see these various layers and ways that these things get deployed down or layered over on top. Microsoft is shown, really this week, that the layered approach is one that even it is beginning to move towards into the future with its new technology called desired state management. Anybody see Jeffrey Snover's presentation the other day on desired state management? Really, really sexy new technology that Microsoft is at the very early stages of deploying, which will again revolutionize how we layer these things on top. Now, in Configuration Manager is another one of these awesome, awesome tools that takes what were a whole bunch of disparate tool sets back in the beginning and aggregates them into a single console. So why self-service, why now? Well, number three is the fact that more so than at any point in our past, we today finally have the tools to realistically accomplish this. And thank you to our Microsoft overlords. Thank you very much. The point here is that until just very recently, we've had all kinds of tools. But with the release of System Center 2012, and then once again with 2012 SP1, and honestly this week with R2, we have a singular unified tool that can accomplish a lot of this. Do you agree? Well, you're here today, so either you're here because you think, yeah, this guy's nuts, or you're trying to validate the fact that you're really interested in accomplishing this. Your goal with this is that at some point in the indeterminate future, you can get to the point where everything in your desktop deployment environment begins with a single image. It is finally possible. Yay! Right? So I told you can do this in 6 easy steps. But it's not any fun unless you to really explain how this is done unless you start with the good part first. You know, kind of how Tarantino does a lot of his films, where the important part comes at the beginning and then you work your way back to it. So I want to start here with those 6 steps, but I want to start with actually step 6, which is the final step in the process. So with all compliments to Mr. Tarantino, let's take a minute and look at how this can look from the user's perspective the moment that they decide something's gone wrong and it comes time for them to rebuild their computer. So here I am with this beautiful like desktop background. I've got my nice little picture of my dog here in the background. And something goes wrong, and because of that something, I figure out that it's time for me to go about rebuilding my desktop. Now, compliments of Configuration Manager. When that time comes, and the software becomes available thanks to the application catalog, I can go to Software Center. And from Software Center, if the application has been made available to me, well, I will find there inside of that list of available software a piece of software I can install. Now, this says install Windows 8, but you probably want to call it something like, I don't know, rebuild my computer. Make it easy for the users. When that happens, they can click a box, they can click the install operating system button, and as you'll notice, the system installs. This process takes, I don't know, a period of time, 10 minutes, 20 minutes, 30 minutes, 40 minutes. Let's spend that amount of time watching it go. No, I'm kidding. So the point of it is that's the end state. That's where we want to get to. Now, this is not going to be some kind of situation where if you've got a faulty network card, you're going to be able to, I don't know, replace the network card through some magic robot thing. But there are a lot of situations where users have just screwed up their machines, and they just want to get their machine back to an original state once again. They want to, you know, hit the, like it is on your phone, where you hold down the button and hit the up arrow key whenever you reboot it, and you reset to the factory default. That's the concept that we're trying to accomplish here, is to reset that user's desktop back to the factory defaults. And then once they're back at those factory defaults, allow them the ability to bring down whatever applications they require or bring down the required ones on their behalf. What I'm about to show you is a simplistic example of how you can do this. And I say the word simplistic because your environment is going to be slightly different from yours, which is going to be slightly different from yours. But the steps are effectively the same because the layers are effectively the same across every person. So bear with me in some of the demos, but the important part to recognize is that this is something that is completely feasible for you to accomplish today. And the reason for that is that when we move away from the monolithic approach that Ghost had used for a lot of years in deploying desktops and move towards an environment that's based on building blocks, suddenly everything begins to make sense. There are a lot of building blocks that are required in order to accomplish this. And there are a few of you in here that will look at these building blocks and say, well, that's a lot of work. And the answer is that it is. But we are getting to an age, and you should see this already with the embrace of PowerShell, that when it comes to automation, automation is like an investment. And so every time you spend time investing in another building block that you can shrink wrap and then make available through any kind of deployment mechanism, well, then you've automated another piece of your job out of existence. IT is one of those weird jobs where our job is to automate ourselves out of a job. Isn't that weird? Anyway, there are five more steps involved with this process. We want to start, number one, with the world's most basic operating system image. Okay, I got an OS image out there. This is one that's effectively right off the DVD. This is kind of a basic state beginning point for what I'm attempting to deploy. On top of that image, the next thing that's important to deploy are the drivers. I've got to have drivers for this thing to work. And drivers come in kind of two different forms, of which I can show you how Config Manager can support both of these different types of forms. I also have updates. I don't want to give a user a machine that doesn't have some form of updates installed onto it and is not already ready to go when it comes out of the box. Once that machine, then, is ready to go, well, then the next step is to install whatever applications are required and then to inject down the user's state information, or what can also be termed their personality. Now, in order to do personality, there's also kind of a gathering phase that can be required in this refresh example, and I'll show you how this works here coming up. But the notion is that with the technologies you have built in Configuration Manager right now today, this is something that you can go home and immediately implement with a little work. So let's talk first about the world's most basic operating system image. Okay, built into Configuration Manager is this operating systems node here under the software library. And there are two things that are required in order to get this just up and running. The first is to identify the software image or the install.wim file that exists on my DVD. I'm literally getting this file out of the sources folder from my Windows 7, or in this case, Windows 8 DVD, and importing it here into Configuration Manager. For Configuration Manager to deploy the operating system in the way that it needs to, it's also necessary to grab what is called the operating system installer as well. Now, this is the part that gets people a little bit confused because, well, there are two different installations. They seem to overlap, and the documentation for this can be somewhat confusing. But the operating system installer is effectively the contents of the DVD, whereas the operating system image is just the WIM file. And for some reason that I am sure someone somewhere can explain to you, you gotta have both. You saw here in this quick example that I put together that, well, pretty much it's just, again, gathering this stuff right off the DVD and everything then just imports into your Configuration Manager infrastructure. Are there any questions about that? Okay, good, that should have been the easy part. You can wake up now. Now, the next step in this process is effectively just dealing with the drivers that you have in your environment. Everybody here has an IT file share or some kind of server, and on that server is a share, and on that share is a drivers folder, and on that drivers folder is probably all of the drivers for every server, desktop, and laptop, and other devices that exist in your environment today. Am I right? Well, in that share, have you ever really just played with the drivers and unpacked them and just keep applying WinZip to them over and over and over again until they just get to their most fundamental, primordial content? When you do that, you end up with drivers that are at their most raw. These are things like OEM files and INF files and CAB files and CAT files. The first step in this process is go home today and go to your driver's location and do that. Just keep it in its original location and just unpack all the driver files until WinZip won't let you unpack them anymore. What you end up with is a set of raw driver files that can be addressed by Configuration Manager. Now, what Config Manager can then do, as we'll find out here in this next demo, is it will take the contents of that location and all of the subfolders of the location you point it to and index every single one of the drivers that you've unpacked. So with one fell swoop, you can actually gather all the driver content that you have. Here's an example. So from this drivers node, I choose to import the drivers. And you'll notice that I'm going to a UNC path here on my Config Manager server. There's the driver's location, and I'm just going to import in these Dell drivers. Now, you'll notice up here that I can choose to import a specific driver, or I can import all the drivers in the following network path and all its subfolders. When that happens, Config Manager identifies, thanks to what the drivers look like, what all these drivers really are. Here they are. There's a list of Intel network drivers for a Dell, and I forget the 9100 desktop. There's the Windows 8 driver for the Intel 825XX NIC. In creating those drivers, in creating that connection to those drivers, you'll notice how I assigned categories to the drivers. Those become important because later on I could use those categories to assign to the machines that we're ultimately deploying to. Hey, this is a Dell driver. Hey, this is a network driver. These are effectively tags that are used. With the drivers in place, my next step is simply to add them into a driver package. This driver package essentially becomes just like all the packages that exist in your Configuration Manager infrastructure. It's a package that can be deployed. Now, the real meat behind what you're seeing here is the fact that built into every Windows instance is a nifty little technology called plug and play. You ever used plug and play before? Right? You ever plugged, I don't know, anything into a Windows box and had it identify, well, what that USB drive is or what that camera is? When you're doing that, you're effectively identifying what the driver ID is and linking it up to whatever driver may exist either on that local machine or out on the Windows, when it goes up to Microsoft to figure out where it's at up on Microsoft. Now, when we create these driver packages, we at the same time allow ourselves to use the database that we've created in Configuration Manager as an additional source for driver content. Yay! That source for driver content means that it has all the GUIDs that are necessary to track between what's the driver I have on that machine and what driver do I need. I no longer even have to worry about installing those drivers directly onto the machines because, well, they just get installed as they're needed at the point that they're needed. This continues with adding any drivers to boot images if you need to, although in most cases those aren't necessarily necessary. Some cases that can be necessary with like storage drivers or network drivers. But effectively what we're doing here is we're creating a driver and assigning that driver to a driver package so that when we go about creating our task sequence a little later, those drivers will be made available and essentially the machine will pick whatever drivers it needs in order to accomplish the job. Questions? Comments? Sarcastic remarks? All right. Does this make sense? Have you done this before? Who's done this before? A couple of people have done this before? Excellent. So drivers, pretty easy with Configuration Manager. For those of you guys that have done it before, what's your success rate? Fairly good. Yeah, there are some cases where you'll find drivers that if the driver is too close to another driver that's in the database, it's maybe not going to work out very well, and you're going to need to do some special effort to identify which driver you want to use. But for the most part, this procedure works out fairly well. Now, someone's got to be asking the question, though, at this point. I've gone through, and I've done a lot of work in getting my drivers unpacked, but you know, every so often there are those drivers that just don't work very well, right? I just can't get them unpacked. Anybody here ever tried to install, I don't know, an NVIDIA driver or an ATI driver or, gosh, just about any video driver in existence? What are the problems with these big old video drivers that are hundreds of megabytes in size? Sorry? Yeah, you can't really unpack the driver because there's other things that are required. There's an ATI control panel that's required. There's an NVIDIA something that ends up in your system tray that's necessary. And when you install the driver, it's not going to install the ancillary components that are necessary in order to accomplish the task. Well, here's where a little bit of sleuthing becomes necessary for you, because remember, Configuration Manager at its core does one and only one thing. Config Manager at its core is essentially a really powerful version of the run prompt, right? If I have some sort of installation, well, then I can also execute that installation as just the same as I would from the run prompt. So let's take, for example, if we have a video driver, right? In this video driver here, here's another video driver for a Dell, again, a recent model Dell desktop. And you'll see that this is an .exe file, fairly large in size. Remember that packages can actually be deployed to machines just like, or drivers can be deployed to machines just like applications if they're coded to be installed just like applications. You'll see here that what I've created is, what I've created is this driver installation with the slash s command here to install those driver files silently. These days, most drivers you're going to find are ones that could be installed silently. And so what you get out of this is the ability to ensure that all the rest of the components get installed correctly by just installing this as a package that gets deployed with your task sequence. We'll talk about task sequences here in just a second. So drivers, if they're your basic drivers, easy to install, to add to the database, drivers that are more complicated to install can be added as packages here into this package interface here with Configuration Manager. Now, one of the problems that you may be asking is, all right, I've got this basic OS image. And that's fine and dandy, Greg, but the basic OS image for Windows, 7 has been out for a year now, a couple of years now, a long period of time. And when that happens, there are a lot of updates that need to occur to that basic OS image in order to get it ready to go so it's fully meeting your security requirements. You can deploy those updates as part of the installation, but gosh, that's going to take a while, isn't it? But one of the things that's now available in System Center 2012 is the ability to do offline patching for OS updates, which means that you can actually patch the WIM file. You can patch the content before you end up deploying it out to the desktops in your environment. And it's actually pretty cool in the way that it integrates with your existing software update point and with your existing WSS infrastructure. Let's take a look here at the OS updates and how I can take that existing, basic bare bones out of the box installation and get it updated so that I can deploy it out. Let me close down here my driver properties screen, and I'm going to move over back to my operating system images location. Right here, you'll notice that if I right-click on the operating system image, I have this item here called Schedule Updates. What this Schedule Updates item allows me to do is effectively create a package. This package then takes the updates that I've selected and deploys those out either on a custom schedule or as soon as possible. So this is something that I can do either as a manual practice or something that I can just do to set up as an automation 3 days after the deployment of the Tuesday updates. With this, I make sure that when I go to deploy out that basic bare bones image, that I have all the necessary drivers installed. Yeah, question? Yes, and the reason for that is because most people, whenever those updates come, his question was every patch Tuesday you'll want to update this. Most patch Tuesdays, whenever they happen, there's going to be a new set of updates. But there will be updates that you probably won't necessarily want to automatically add to the image. You'll want to spend some time testing them, making sure that they're not going to create any problems. So this gives you the ability to discreetly identify which ones you want. A little later on, as we'll see when we get into the task sequences, there is the ability to then just deploy all the mandatory updates that may not have made it onto the image. One of the ideas behind this schedule updates function is that with this, you could perhaps schedule just the updates that need to occur every so often and then catch up with the task sequence. So the image or the basic image is mostly updated with the rest of it happening in real time as the machine gets deployed. I hit it in the beginning, and I also hit it there at the end. Great question. Other questions? Yeah, in the back. Right. What you bring up is an excellent point. That what I like to tell people with Configuration Manager is the more time you spend with it, the more you realize that there is sort of an art and a science to the use of this tool. And a trainer, a teacher, a book can teach you the science, but the art is left up to you. And so the point you make is very, very astute. There's a lot of different ways to accomplish that. I haven't seen that way myself, but it's a perfectly valid way you can use to actually get these updates deployed. Now remember too, that once you approve an update in either your WSS infrastructure or in your software update point, there's going to be a checkbox a little later on that will allow you to deploy the mandatory updates at the point that the desktop gets deployed. So it provides kind of a catch-up for you later on, I'll say. Did that answer your question? Other questions? Yeah. His question was, we use Office in our based image, and is there a way to inject the updates into Office? What you bring up is an excellent point. If Office is in your image, in the basic bare bones image, and updating that becomes a complex task because you've included Office in the image, would it make sense to remove Office from the image so that you could maintain an updated version of it in your package source location and deploy it on demand? Now, that doesn't answer your question directly, but it introduces another way of thinking. Again, the reason why I started with this, with the whole idea of a basic and bare bones and the world's most basic OS image, is to get our minds separated from the notion of a fat deployment model. The more layers that I can apply to the model, the easier it gets, because then I can deploy the updated version of Office by just dropping it in the right location and everything works appropriately. That said, there are tools that you can use to deploy images like ImageX to mount a WIM and then to inject the MSU into that image, and it sits in an offline mode and installs when the image boots. But that's something that's going to occur outside of Configuration Manager. Yeah. His question was, if I have driver packages and the drivers keep updating new versions, when do I go through and clean up the driver packages? You know, that's a task that can happen whenever you go about actually finding the new versions of the drivers and testing them appropriately. One of the worst things you can do is to create that driver package location that is very, very large, particularly with multiple versions of the driver, because occasionally plug and play gets confused and grabs the wrong version. I tend to keep mine fairly clean with just the appropriate version for whatever piece of hardware that exists out there. Great question. Now, step three here is honestly one of the more challenging ones, but it is made easier thanks to Configuration Manager and Configuration Manager's embrace of new approaches in delivering applications. And you know, as you can imagine, right, one of the central themes behind this entire new approach in delivering desktops is the whole concept of self-service. What that means is that in order to be able to deliver self-service, you have to be able to deliver the applications back to the user in a way that they can actually get to them. Now, in Config Manager, we now have a variety of different ways that or technologies that we can deploy those applications to users. I can deploy them directly. I can deploy them as appv packages. But there is going to be a point in time where the packages that you intend the users to make use of, you need to make them available as applications in Configuration Manager. The good point is that these days, with Config Manager's self-service functionality in the application catalog, once you package the app, well, then the user can go about actually deploying whatever applications they require. Think of it back to the iPad example. When you go and rebuild your iPad, or when you refresh its settings back to default, or when you do the same thing with your phone, more often than not, you're going to go down and download all those applications again because you know which applications you require. This is something that the application developers have done as far as packaging those things up, but at least it does give you the ability to bring your iPad or your device or your tablet back to that state because all those applications have been packaged. These days, we're getting to the point where really pretty much your apps have got to get packaged in order to do a lot of this stuff. And it really is probably one of the hardest parts and one of the longest acting parts in accomplishing this today. Thoughts about that? Anybody gone through the application packaging activity so far? How well have you done?
Depends on the app.
Depends on the app. I'll tell you what, I have been talking with some of the different vendors out there, and there are some very wise vendors out there that have recognized that the packaging process has gotten quite a bit more challenging these days. There are a number of third-party applications that have been brought into play to automate a lot of this packaging activity. Dell has a ChangeBase application, for example. Citrix has an AppDNA package or service. That literally you can point these technologies out at your source location, where all of your manual installations are, and give it a set of virtual machines and say, go. These tools will then automatically grab any installers, install them into virtual machines, package them based off of a set of rules, and then deliver you whatever application packages you require in any of the major formats. So if you're finding that some of your packaging activities have not been successful, there are technologies that exist today that can really significantly speed up the process of getting those applications packaged. So I know that's a go buy a tool thing, but sometimes going and buying a tool can really save yourself some time. The fourth one here is personality. And I'm going to spend a little bit more time here on personality because it's the one that is perhaps the least documented or maybe one of the worst kept secrets in this whole process. Microsoft has not done a very good job of explaining how you can take personality from one machine and then transfer it to another. Or more specifically, how you can take personality from one machine, customize the content that you're getting from that first machine, and then transfer it over to the second machine. So I want to spend a pretty decent amount of time here because this is kind of the juice in ensuring that when that user gets their new machine back, well, they're going to get their new machine with all the stuff that's necessary. We'll start with the basics. All right, so here I have my package, and I've actually packaged up in Config Manager my Configuration Manager client package, something I do that involves no program, just the package itself. With this client package, I'm essentially pointing it to the client folder in my Configuration Manager source location, right on my site server. I also have the User State Migration tool, which is a part of the Windows ADK, or Automated Deployment Toolkit. The Automated Deployment Toolkit is a tool that you have to get installed onto your machine. When you install it onto your site server, you'll see there in the Windows Kits 8.0 Assessment and Deployment Kit, User State Migration Tool Location, that's where you're going to find the USMT. No program, again. Once you create those two packages without the programs, you'll see we have a state migration point, which you'll probably need to add to your site server to accomplish. Now here, this state migration point becomes what is effectively the, what is effectively the location where all of your data can be stored between the period of eliminating the old machine and bringing back the new machine. Let me go find this thing. Where is it? Where is it at? Here we go. There. So between the old instance of the machine and the new rebuilt instance of the machine, there will be a bunch of user content that needs to get migrated from old location to new. You know what this stuff is. This is application settings. This is the pictures of people's cats, right? And we all know that if you lose the pictures of people's cats, people get really irritated. So the user state migration point becomes that location where this data gets stored and where it eventually gets pulled from. Now, the one thing that's really awesome about the way Configuration Manager has supported this, as opposed to the USMT in the Microsoft Deployment Toolkit, is the addition of this little deletion policy you see right down here in the bottom. You ever had, or if anybody's worked with the MDT, you ever had a situation where you end up with a restore gone wrong, or a restore that probably didn't complete, or something that occurs with the restore that prevents all of the pictures of people's cats from getting from the former location onto the new machine. That is a classic very bad day. Now in Config Manager, what Config Manager allows you to do is actually save that content for a period of days prior to its automatic deletion. And it allows you to essentially provide just a couple days worth of backups a couple days worth of secondary storage for that user content, so that if the user has any kind of problems whatsoever, you can go back and resuscitate any of the data before it gets automatically deleted. Absolutely recommend turning this on and setting it to a small number of days, because it will protect you from an accidental cat deletion. That kind of takes us through to the end of the basics here. And again, state migration point, a package without a program, and there I have USMT that's ready and raring to go for creating an OS deployment. But one of the problems is USMT can only take you so far. Who here has used USMT before? A couple of you? Who here just hates the tool? Why do you hate the tool? It just never got it to work. It's not working for us. Somebody else? Garbage in, garbage out. Crap in, crap out, right? Missing stuff. Do you, in your environments today, use any kind of application that doesn't come from Microsoft? I'm sure some of you do, right? And those applications, they put their code always in the right location, don't they? You know, the apps that store stuff in local machine instead of current user, or create an INI file in the root of C for some ridiculous reason. Well, in a perfect world where everything runs on Microsoft, which I think only happens probably at Microsoft, the USMT and the things that it does work fairly well. But the problem is that the rest of us live in reality. And so sometimes it becomes necessary for us to customize what the USMT can actually gather. And one of the worst perception problems with the USMT is the recognition that customizing this tool is perhaps Configuration Manager's worst kept secret. There are, in fact, three files that the USMT uses as its original basis for defining where it's going to locate the information it copies over. These files we call the MIGs. The first is MIGApp, second is MIGUser, and the third is MIGDocs. You'll typically use two of these, although you don't end up using all three of them because you use one or the other of the bottom two. But the notion here is that these XML files are description documents for identifying the locations on disk and in the registry where things need to be captured. Let's take a look at what these files look like. I think you'll find that they're extremely human readable. Not really. So here inside of program files, if I take a look at Windows kits and in the 8.0 location, I go to the assessment and deployment kit and I look at the user state migration tool, I'll show you that there are these three files here, MIGApp, MIGDocs, and MIGUser. Here is what MIGApps looks like. Now see if you can actually capture any relevant information out of this location. Lovely, lovely, lovely XML here. And if I scroll down, you'll find all this random content that, I don't know, if it makes sense to you, you probably belong in more of a developer class than you do here. Well, that's okay. MIGDocs looks similar. MIGDocs involves a more heuristic-based approach to where it locates the contents it's looking for. MIGUser is a customizable approach per user for looking at specific things. But again, the notion here is that this is the instructions that USMT is going to use for defining what it needs to gather off of machines. Now, the hard part here is the fact that, well, I need to customize USMT, and I don't know about you, but I've never written a line of XML code before in my life. Does this describe you? Would you like to continue to not write a line of XML code for the rest of your life? Ideally, yes. Well, the good news is that there is a mechanism, or a pair of mechanisms, that you can use for actually customizing how USMT does its job. And this is kind of the hard part, because there are, in fact, two different mechanisms. The first is the mechanism you use when you want to remove an item from a migration. My friend up here mentioned the word crap, right? Cut that out of the recording. Crap. And the problem with these migrations is that I end up with a bunch of garbage in the outside that I would prefer not to be on the inside. These are things like videos of people's cats. right? They're much larger than the pictures of people's cats, or MP3 files, or copies of Elf Bowling. You know, all the things that you want to necessarily get away from this machine that may be the reason why the machine is breaking in the first place. Well, removing items from a migration is something that requires just a little bit of command line work to turn this not very human readable content into actually human readable content. Now, here I am on a Windows, I believe this is a Windows XP computer. Okay, I'm on this computer because I need to use this computer as the basis for turning the instruction document into a series of here's what I'm going to migrate. Right, so on this computer, I map over to my config manager server into that Windows Kits location. From that mapping, I create the Y drive mapping here. And that Y drive mapping takes me to the USMT folder on that machine. The USMT folder on that machine includes two different commands that do the brunt work in deploying USMT. ScanState, which is the first of these commands, looks at a machine and figures out what needs to be migrated. LoadState, which is the other half, then deploys all the stuff that was migrated back into its location where it needs to go. But what a lot of people don't recognize is that ScanState has been instrumented to do some extra work as well, using this /genconfig switch here. Now, all I'm doing with this genconfig switch is using these XML files, these MIGs, both MIGApp and MIGUser in this case, as the point of comparison for this computer. What I get out of this is another XML file. In this case, I'm just calling it custom-config.xml file. But what's interesting about this replacement file is that while it might look a little bit complex here as you're looking at it, one thing is very different. The inclusion of this migrate equals to yes item on every single one of the items that has been identified and inventoried out of the system. For anything that I don't want to get migrated over, all I simply do is change the yes to a no. I can eliminate all the crap out of your system now. You'll just go through all these things. Just identify which things you want to get rid of and remove them out of the migration, and then they're not going to end up on the resulting machine after the user rebuilds. Is this useful? Awesome. Now, removing things from a migration is nice, but I'm guessing that it's adding things to the migration that's probably a little bit more useful to you. Am I right? I mean, I've got an app that's putting data into the wrong location. I've got, my users, I've told them to put their stuff in the root of C drive because I was young once. And so I need to get that stuff moved over. Well, thankfully, there is a process you can go through to actually customize the USMT to add things to a migration. This is an entirely separate process. One would hope that someday they would consolidate these things into something a little easier, but I haven't dinkered around with it in R2 yet to see if this has been improved. Now, there are third-party tools out there that can accomplish this too, but you've got to pay for those. So I'll show you what this process is, and you can decide. I want to add stuff to the migration. Okay? And when I add stuff to the migration, here's where I actually have to do a little bit of maybe coding of XML. But before you groan, recognize that most of this content is content you really don't have to worry about. Because if you ever played with XML before, like 87% of XML is just wrapper code for the actual data you care about, right? Right here in green is an example for adding a folder and subfolders to a migration. Everything else in this content here is wrapper code for the item that exists in green. This item says pattern type equals file, C:\user documents/*, and then another star, and then /pattern. All this says is that I want to gather the contents out of the user documents folder and all of its subfolders. Make sense? If there's a specific file I'm looking for, I can drop the file name in here or use a wildcard. If I'm not interested in the brackets here, if I'm not interested in the subfolders, I can remove the wildcard after the trailing slash in that. But essentially, that's the mechanism I can do to add a folder and subfolders in by creating this tiny, tiny little bit of XML code, which, when you go home, you can copy and paste right off this slide. You're welcome. You're welcome. That's half of the thing. What's the other half of things I need to add to a migration? Registry settings, right? Typically, I got to go do some registry settings too, and sometimes it's in local machine, and sometimes it's actually in current user. But thankfully, here is the copy and pasteable code you can use for actually migrating a registry setting. Here is HKey on the top, HKey current user, software, USMT test key. In this case, we're looking at all the subkeys, but we're looking for something called my key. The bottom one says HKey local machine USMT test key. And the idea here is we want to grab the content out of the registry location and for the users that we are specifically targeting for that machine. Does this make sense? Is this something you would do? Cool. I was hoping for an aha moment here, and hopefully I've received it. Now, the question you'd be asking is, all right, well, how do I actually do something with this? It's great to put a bunch of XML code up on a slide, but, well, okay, now what do I actually do to, you know, bring this in? Well, the good news is that thanks to the power of copy and paste, all you really need to do is to create that text file or that XML file, right? Open it up in Notepad or whatever your favorite Notepad editor is, and then paste the code in, and you're mostly done. Bam! We'll actually address this here in just a second as we move over into the final step, which is the task sequence. Now, what's great about this is that Microsoft has an entire TechNet article that provides exquisite detail and many, many examples of how you can then further customize this to use regular expressions, to use searching, to use all kinds of techniques to find additional content on those drives. And that's the URL for it if you're looking for it. It's a great example, or a great source for some examples for further customizing the USMT. Once you have both of these items, your XML document that removes items from the migration, your XML document that adds things to the migration, how you actually incorporate these into the final step in the process involves the use of the task sequence. And throughout the entirety of this process, all we've been doing is creating a variety of different building blocks. Remember how I said that this whole point behind deployment these days is the layering effect and the assimilation of these building blocks to occur at the moment that at the moment we deploy the machine? Well, it's the task sequence that enables this to happen. Here's how it works. If I go through here and switch back to my Configuration Manager server and to my software library, here's the task sequence that we're creating. I'm going to create this task sequence as an install an existing image package task sequence. I'll give it a name, something easy like, I don't know, rebuild my computer. I can associate it with a boot image here. I'll set it up with the x64-based boot image. And then go through all the package identification stuff. I'm going to deploy Windows 8. I'm going to deploy whatever indicator, or whatever version of Windows 8 that I have. Do I want to join a domain, for example? Do I want to join my domain? And do I want to make sure that machine ends up in a specific OU as well? What's the account that I'm going to use for deploying this to the domain? In this case, it'll be my account. I also have to deploy the Configuration Manager client to the machine at the point it gets deployed so that all the rest of the automations can still occur, as well as deal with state migration. You'll see here, here's where we're deploying stuff and saving those user settings and files on that state migration point. This next screen gives me the ability to deploy out any remaining mandatory software updates. And then lastly, any software that I must ensure get deployed onto that machine without having to wait for the users to bring it down. Now, in your case with Office, for example, Office is a mandatory installation. Rather than including it on the image, I can just include it as an application that automatically gets installed as part of this task sequence. Finally, the summary and the progress and the task sequence ends up being completed. Now, The neat part about this task sequence is that I can go through and actually edit it for adding additional stuff, right? I can change things like the network settings or the how my settings are for user state. But I have to go through that linkage then to link all the work I've done with the user state migration toolkit and the actual defaults that the USMT provide. This screen capture right here is actually the point at which I can define which of the settings I'm going to use for customizing USMT. The task sequence variable name here is called OSD Migrate Additional Capture Options. And I know it's tiny, I apologize for that, but there are a number of switches here that identify where the configuration location is. Here's that custom config XML file that I created. I'm using relative pathing here so I can locate it. And then right up here at the top is this pair of switches that are really, really helpful in reducing the amount of stuff that ends up getting migrated from the old machine to the new. The first switch there says /UEL:30, and then the second switch says /UE:*. These switches allow me to identify, in the first case, how many days old of the profiles that exist on that machine do I want to migrate. Any profile that has not been logged into for, in this case, longer than 30 days is simply going to be ignored. The second then says, go ahead and add in any domain profiles into this as well. There are further switches you can use to restrict out the local profiles or to add the local profiles in. There are further switches you can use to identify which of the profiles you want or extend the number of days or reduce the number of days. But this is here to help you remove the data that is unnecessary, that's probably been old because that machine's been around for a long period of time. Okay? Useful switches there. And again, the reference here to the custom config file is that custom config file I created in removing items from the migration. To add things to the migration, further down here in the task sequence is a location where I can identify the configuration files that I want to add to the migration. The first two are the ones that we talked about just a minute ago, MigApp and MigUser. The third is that second custom config file, the one that I copied and pasted into Notepad, to actually capture the things I wanted to add to the migration. Now, all that deals with just the capture piece, right? So I have now identified the settings for capturing items out of the migration. I've then got to go through, and on the other side, once the operating system has been deployed, restore all that user state content. The user state restore content happens, or customizing it happens here by setting another task sequence variable called OSD migrate additional restore options. And here all I'm doing is using a single switch to identify the path to that definition document, that custom config.xml, that identifies what I want to actually restore from the restore to that machine once it's done. Second thing is, if I've got stuff I want to add, just go back here into these configuration files and add in MigApp, and then add in MigUser as well, and my second custom config file, the one that I'm using to add things to the migration. So these and other different custom configurations are those that you can add into your task sequence in order to ensure that when the user clicks that button, the one that we talked about early on, that they're going to end up with all the stuff that's necessary in order to accomplish this. I hope you don't mind the videos, but in 75 minutes, can you imagine me trying to do this live? Yeah, I thought about it, but I thought that was really a bad idea. So now, we have all the building blocks. We have the assembly of the building blocks. We have this nice document that states step by step all the actions that we want to accomplish in order to get that machine rebuilt to the user's specification. But we haven't really talked yet about the self-service portion of this. How do I facilitate the users being able to accomplish this on their own? Well, the good news is that in Config Manager 2012, you get that self-service through a combination of the Software Center and the Application Catalog. Software Center is the tool that the users will see in their start menu. You know, it's a new applet that exists whenever you install the Config Manager agent. But the trick is when you deploy out this task sequence, just like you would deploy any package or any application, We're going to go back to 1995, where we, instead of requiring the deployment, like what we've done for years and years with Configuration Manager, instead we set the purpose to available. And when I set that purpose to available, what happens is the user then gets the option to choose when this application gets installed. And from the user's perspective, well, the application being installed is just the rebuild of the system. You can see here I'm adding these distribution points here so that I can upload the content. And once the content is uploaded, well, then I go through and deploy out this application. So the task sequence is rebuild my computer. I select a collection of machines that I want to deploy this to. I check the purpose here and ensure that the purpose is set to available so that the users can accomplish this whenever they want. Schedule whenever it starts. Click through the remaining steps here in this wizard. And then after a period of time, this deployment will appear over at the user machine as a new piece of software that they can then deploy. I think I click over here over to the user's machine to actually take a look at this. It doesn't take more than a few seconds these days with Config Manager for the new software to become available. Once that new software is available, you can click it or go back into the software center, and there's my Rebuild Your Computer application that the user can click, choose to install, verify that, yes, indeedy, I want to go and install that operating system and begin that process. What do you think? Is this something you could accomplish right now, today? Awesome. Questions about this? Yeah, in front. Sorry, say it again. I still can't hear you.
State migration.
Yeah, there are multiple locations where you can install the state migration point onto. Yeah, and it can be in wherever you want it to be. Other questions? Yeah. We can hear you. That's the best part. The Configuration Manager agent has the admin rights, so the user doesn't have to. Another question over here. For your backup processes? For the bare metal processes, it's not necessarily something you would be able to support for the users because there is no operating system there. But absolutely, if you have the what's the role that you installed, the Pixie service point installed. Thank you. If you have the Pixie service point installed, then the Pixie service point would provide access to whatever task sequences exist. Now, one thing you may be asking is, you know what, Greg? I'm not so sure if I just want to give users the willy-nilly access to be able to install anything or rebuild their machine whenever they want. Remember that in Config Manager 2012, there is the ability to require a request, an approval, before an action occurs. This is something that's set up whenever you create the deployment. It is possible also in Configuration Manager, with the help of things like System Center Service Manager and System Center Orchestrator, to construct up an orchestration. That orchestration would give you the ability to create what you see here, which is essentially a request template and a service template here, a service offering that says, you know what? My desktop is busted. When my desktop is busted, I'm going to go ahead and click the May I Rebuild My Computer Please request, service request. This service request kicks off a request form that allows the user to submit out to whoever their manager may be to request that computer template or their computer to be rebuilt. Once that request gets fulfilled, that request can then go to, for example, here in Orchestrator, an orchestration that says, you know what? When any of that happens, go ahead and initialize the data for the machine that occurs when the service manager requests gets approved. Add that machine to the collection, update the collection settings, and perform the client action that says download my machine policy and my user policy to speed up the process. So you see here there are a lot of different options that you can choose if what you're looking for is additional control even over the self-service process. Any other questions? Yeah?
We have a lot of branches that are remote. Are you
Yep. Deploying distribution, you can deploy to distribution points and the task sequences, and in fact, the task sequences need to be local in order to accomplish things. One time. Yeah, you'll copy it over one time to get it to the remote distribution point, and then from there, the users will work internal to that distribution point. You got time for, another question? Say it again. In the case, his question was, if I've got people that are out in the field and the person's not in the office, do I just want to just push something out to that user? In the case of pushing it out to the user, absolutely. We've been doing that since prior to Config Manager 2012. Come on up afterwards, and we'll defer that to afterwards. So, and now the building blocks. So concluding here in this session is the recognition that there are a bunch of building blocks. You need the world's most basic OS image, you need those drivers and updates, applications and personality, and you bring everything together with that task sequence. And ultimately layer over the top any of that workflow that's necessary either inside of Configuration Manager or with Service Manager in combination with Orchestrator. Yes, there is a reality moment here, and you are going to need to package your apps, more or less all the apps. And yes, it'll be hard. And yes, that will consume time, but yes, people have been doing application packaging for almost 2 decades, and it's a technology and an approach that is fairly well mature at this point. The best part is that once you've done that, with a little work, you will achieve awesomeness. Thank you very much.